Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show, outoflimitsradio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. Judging by the unique music, tonight is special because it is our 10-year anniversary. I cannot believe I'm doing the show for 10 years, and so much has changed. So first off, let me say to all our amazing listeners, thank you so much. You are the heart and soul that have allowed this program to flourish and grow. And the first couple months, I think we were getting about 5 to 20 listens per show. And I think it was my father listening to it 20 times. Father Bill McCormick. And over time, it grew. And it started to grow really fast. Within about 6 weeks, Out of Limits started on Blog Talk Radio, then it became nationally syndicated on KKRP Radio, which was on 25 stations across the U.S., which is amazing. So that happened in about 6 weeks, and it grew and grew. And, you know, as of now, we've had over 2 million downloads, 2 million listeners, and thousands of listeners per show. So it's been amazing, and I want to acknowledge some of our amazing listeners out there, the ones that have been with us almost from the very beginning. That includes Jenny Lemisa, Flicka Ron, Lisa McNorton, Crystal, and Julie. You are all so special to me. Thank you. And also want to acknowledge astrologer Constance Dallas and psychic medium Carrie O'Connor. They're known as the two of the original virtues. So to take everyone back to 2014, when Out of Limits first started, it was known as the world's only show about forensic soul analysis. So we would have a guest, and then after the interview, Constance and Carrie and two other psychics, Lisa Kaza and Laura Lynn, they would each do an analysis on that person, talking about their past lives, talking about the soul trajectory. It was a very original concept, and we did that for a long time. And then from there, the show just kind of grew and evolved and went in different places. Then they just became one-on-one interviews. And I can distinctly remember that once the program started, I met two people I would say that really had a significant impact on my life, and that was Philip Smith. He had that interview called Walking Through Walls and about his father, who was like another Edgar Casey. And Nancy Dannison, who was a near-death survivor, showed up. And she reached out to me, and we just clicked, and she became a huge part of the show. We had her on for, I think, 10 or 11 different programs. And I just want to tell you about a couple programs that I thought really stood out. And the first one immediately is the Death Show, known as Death and Healing. And that was a get this 14-part, 18-hour show that had 65 experts all talking about what to do when you lose someone. It's something I'm really proud of that. We've also done a show about weight loss. That was a 4-part series looking at the metaphysical and mental health aspects and physical aspects of losing weight. We've also done, one of the other ones I really love is The Mysteries of the Heart with the late Dr. Stephen Sinatra. But we've also had a number of celebrities on the show too. And that include Frank Vincent from Goodfellas. We were at the last interview that he did. Richard Belzer came on the show. Stacey Keach came on. And we also had one of the unique programs I thought stood out was the series of interviews we did with Chung Fu. That was a channeled spirit, and we really got along. But Out of Limits has just continued to grow, And I feel that what makes us really stand out is we don't hold anything back. There isn't any area of consciousness we're not willing to explore. We just go after it. There's no rules. There's no guidelines. There's just like, let's just do whatever we can to go there. And it doesn't matter where the truth is. It could be in a light place. It could be in a very dark place. It doesn't matter. Let's just go. Let's just seek it out and find it and explore. And again, I just want to say what an honor it has been to be doing this show, and what a great blessing it has been to have you all be with me and to go along this ride. And I can just tell you, again, in the last 10 years, I've changed a lot. When the show first started, I was just, some dude. Now I'm a dad. And, you know, you were actually aside from my immediate family, you were the first people I told that I was having a kid. And it was wild. I felt like that was so cool. Like, that was a very intimate moment that we shared together. And after I had COVID, which was awful, I told you about that whole experience. And, you know, we've all kind of grown and evolved together. And it's been absolutely beautiful. So, again, I just want to say how thankful I am for you, how much you're appreciated. And I want to do this for another 10, 20, 30 years. I want to do this until I leave the physical plane. But before we begin with our featured guest, I want to play the introduction to you for the old show in a minute of what the first show sounded like. So here we go.
If you feel there's more to life than iPhones and iPads and mindless consumerism, if you're open to receiving information in all forms in any number of ways, if organized religion, organized political movements, and any kind of collectivism doesn't just quite cut it for you, if you engage in critical thinking, if you think for yourself, if you have peace and love in your heart and Jack Daniels in your bloodstream, if you believe that seriousness is a disease, if you're curious, then come, let us go on a journey together as we explore the outer limits of inner truth.
Welcome to the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show, outerlimitsradio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. The world-famous philosopher Lao Tzu once said, "The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step," and that, tonight, is the single step. This is the inaugural edition of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. And if you're listening right now, this is what you're in for. You're in for a show about deep introspection, a show that's designed to help you unlock the keys from within you, to help you unlock your true potential. There are a lot of shows out there that want to focus on finding the truth out there. What's out there? We want to find out what's in here. Explore interesting people, find out what works for them, and see if we can get it to work for you as well. And it is truly an honor to have you with us. We hope you'll stay with us. And welcome to the inaugural edition of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show.
10-year anniversary of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth. And our very first guest that we had was Jeffrey Gurian. He's a modern-day Renaissance man. And that same individual who appeared in the very first show was appearing on the 10-year anniversary show because, I mean, how could you run out of things to talk with Jeffrey about? Not only is he a Renaissance, he's a doctor, motivational speaker, comedy writer, performer, director, author, producer, radio personality. I also think he's just, I think he's from a different galaxy too, for sure. And to give you a little more information about him, he's going to be the keynote speaker at the Academy of Dentistry. It's 2024 convention in Minneapolis on the 18th of July, if you happen to be there. And last month he did 3 shows and he was the official interviewer for the Sunshine Comedy Festival in Tampa, Florida. So there's a lot going on with Jeffrey. A little more about Jeffrey by going to his website, jeffreygurian.com. Mr. Gurian, the highest of honors to be with you once again, my friend. Thank you for being with us.
It's truly my honor and congratulations. It's so rare that somebody can create something and go on for 10 years. It's really, truly an honor. I was so happy to be on your first one. And I can't really grasp the fact that 10 years have gone by. And you're a dad and our life.
I'm a dad, you're alive. And can you, just to give everyone a recap, you know, we were just talking about it a minute ago. Can you please tell people, we give a recap of what happened to you in the last 10 years? I mean, because it's pretty wild.
Well, 10 years ago was 2014. So I had just finished doing Nick Kroll and John Mulaney's show on Comedy Central, and then their Broadway show, The Oh Hello Show, which was a hit show. And they had me open the show for them, and they made me a special jacket that was a replica of the Guardian Angels jacket, but mine says Gurion Angels. And they had me wear that to the. I have it in the closet inside. I should have got it and showed it to you on screen. And that was 2014. So many things have happened since then. I have 8 books now, 5 on comedy, 3 on happiness. My last 3 books have allowed me to become a motivational speaker, and I speak all over. So as you mentioned, I'm the keynote speaker for the Academy of General Dentistry's 2024 convention at the Minneapolis Convention Center, a huge convention center. And I'm doing a weekend at Omega, at the Omega Institute, this coming July. I'm sorry, this coming September, from September 20th to the 22nd. I'll be talking about my happiness books, about happiness, mindset, and how to change negative thinking to positive thinking, which is a great honor to be able to speak at the Omega Institute. And 2015, I was lucky enough to survive a widowmaker heart attack. And
Is
I
that the
was.
time when the cop was telling you, like, why don't you just walk to the hospital? You had
Yes,
asked the cop, like,
yes.
can you, he's like, why don't you just walk to the hospital or something?
Hospital. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I stopped cops in the street and I said, it's very embarrassing to tell people that you think you're having a heart attack, because what if you're not, you know? And he said to me, we're stuck in traffic. It'll probably be faster if you walk. And I said, well, where's the nearest hospital? And he didn't know. None of the cops knew. And he said to me, do you have Google Maps? He took out his phone and he was looking for hospitals. And I'm standing there, it's pouring rain, and I'm holding an umbrella. And I hate to be out in the rain, as stupid as it sounds, because of my hair. I don't like to go out in the rain, and I'm having a heart attack. And he said to me, I think you should download Google Maps. And that's when I walked away. I'm like, my life is a Woody Allen movie. This can't even happen. I'm telling the cop I'm having a heart attack. He tells me to download Google Maps. And I could only get another half a block because the pain was getting very intense. And I stopped the second cop. And I said to the cop, I'm sorry to bother you. I think I'm having a heart attack. And he said to me, well, stand on the side. And I stood there for a couple of minutes. And I said to him, are they coming? And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't call them yet. It's like nobody took it too seriously, Ryan. And I'll
That's
tell you,
crazy.
I think it was because I stayed very calm. I used my spiritual training. And I told myself, this is a very weird experience. And if I'm having a heart attack in the middle of the street, I've never been sick like this. For whatever reason, this is my path. Because like I can envision some people having a heart attack in the street and they're screaming. And I said, excuse me, I think I'm having a heart attack. And I think because I was so calm that they didn't take it very seriously. Finally, a fire truck pulled up because firemen are usually EMTs, and very often they're the first on the scene. So 4 or 5 firemen get off the truck, and a guy says to me, who's the patient? And I said, me. And he said, well, climb up on the truck. And I said, really? And he goes, now we're just effing with you, like that.
Jeez,
I couldn't believe it. So finally, an ambulance came and they took me to the hospital. The doors wouldn't open. They couldn't get me in the hospital. They're asking me a million questions. They don't put on the siren. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. And luckily, some genius put me on blood thinners because the type of heart attack I had didn't show on an EKG. So they
wow.
weren't convinced I was having a heart attack. And when you have a blockage like I had, they said theoretically you're supposed to do a stent within 90 minutes. They didn't do it till the next day.
That's crazy.
So they saved me. So I'm back on stage performing 5 days later. And the owner of New York Comedy Club said to me, what are you crazy? You just had a heart attack. How could you be here on stage? And I said, yeah, but it's hard to get a spot here. I don't want to lose my spot. He said,
Always looking at that.
only a comedian could think that. So I got through that. And then March of 2020, when COVID came out,
You got it really bad. I remember you were telling me that you're stuck in a room with like two or three other people. This is like peak COVID. This is when New York was like bad, really bad.
oh, it was March of 2020. And I waited for 2 weeks. Well, you know, I'm a trendsetter. I went right out and got it. I don't want to
Yeah.
wait. So I get
Trendsetter.
the worst germ you could get. And they were warning people not to go to the emergency room, especially if you have a heart condition,
Yeah.
because the germs were so strong. And I waited for 2 weeks, and I was getting sicker and sicker by the day. But I put myself on Z-Pak. I always keep antibiotics in the house as a doctor. When I get sick, it goes right to my throat. So I keep Z-Pak in the house, which is truly a miracle drug. It works on your lungs. It's specific for your breathing, for your lungs. And my kids would call me. I couldn't let anybody visit me because it was so contagious. And they were saying, "Dad, can you breathe?" And I was like, "Yeah, I can still breathe." And they're like, "Well, maybe it's not COVID." And I had one of those old-time thermometers that my great-grandmother from Russia would have made fun of. I had the old-time, like the mercury thermometers, if you remember those, instead of a digital thermometer. I should be embarrassed to admit it. But so I couldn't get a good reading on my fever. Well, after 2 weeks, I called an ambulance. I couldn't wait anymore. I was so sick. I didn't know how I was going to get through the night. That's how sick I was. And I finally got the courage to call 911. It was very scary. And I started thinking in my sickness, I couldn't think straight. What do you wear to go to the hospital? Can you believe that? I'm trying to figure out what kind of an outfit to wear. And it's March and it's freezing. And I realized I should wear clothes that can come off easily so they could take my blood pressure and give me medication. And when the guys from the ambulance showed up, first of all, when I called the ambulance, they wouldn't agree to come right away because New York was overrun with cases and they were running out of ambulances. And when I told them all my symptoms, they agreed to come and get me. And two men came in hazmat suits. I'll never forget it. And one of the men took my hand and he said, "Don't worry, you're going to be okay." And I couldn't believe it. That little act of kindness, Ryan, that small act of kindness meant so much to me because I had been alone, so sick for 2 weeks with scary stuff, hearing all these people are dying.
Yeah.
And he was amazed that I could get on the stretcher by myself. He said most people needed to be carried.
When I say this, with regards to your heart attack and your experience with COVID, around that period of time, did you notice anything significant that you were battling internally? Did you feel that because of those experiences, you had a growth or you had your perception changed about life because of those experiences?
No, you know why? I've been studying spirituality for 27 years, and I've always been grateful. And I really think that helped me to get through these experiences. I made fun, like I was joking with the surgeon on the operating table with my heart. And when they took me for COVID, I wasn't joking. I mean, I was so sick, but I was on my third day, they put me in a room with three other very sick men. And
When you told me this story, this is horrifying.
I was hoping they were kidding me when they told me the man in the bed next to me was from Wuhan, China. I'm
Oh
like, get out of here. That can't even happen.
my God.
I'm laying there next to patient zero. I'm like, of all people, I have to be laying next to a guy from Wuhan, China. And he's coughing and choking into the air with no mask on. And so I'm really nervous. And they put me on hydroxychloroquine before they politicized it. That drug could have saved thousands of people. You know that. You should never politicize medicine. Shouldn't be allowed. That drug had been around for more than 60 years. People were using it for other conditions. And when I went into the hospital, COVID was very new. It had just basically come to the public's attention. So they didn't have to put me back on Z-Pak because I had put myself on it. The usual dose was 5 days. I stayed on it for 10 days. And between that and the hydroxychloroquine, that saved my breathing. So on the fourth day, they were able to send me home because they ran out of beds. They were putting people in the hallway already, and they needed the space. They could hardly, it was hard for them to find an ambulance to drive me home. So it was a nightmare of an experience, but I had to fight to stay positive. And I think it's a very important thing. When you're in a negative space, your immune system is not functioning as well. It's hard to fight off infection. When you're in a positive space, your immune system functions much better. So in that insanity with these three men, one had to be rushed out. His oxygen dropped from 93 to 80 within seconds. They had to race him to the emergency room. And I was surrounded by that. And I had to really fight to stay positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they brought me in and they put me in the emergency room, this is a story that your listeners might appreciate. They put me in a cubicle next to a woman who was screaming. And I'm not exaggerating. She was literally screaming with every breath that she took.
Jeez.
And I thought to myself, why they have to put me in here? Why couldn't they move me someplace else? And I realized, you know, the spiritual answer, like there's a tendency to ask yourself, why me when you're going through something like that? Why me? Why has this happened to me? The spiritual answer is, why not me? Whoever promised me that my life is supposed to be perfect. So I had to step outside myself and think about that woman instead of thinking about myself, how scared she must be or how much pain she must be in to be screaming like that. And they finally moved me. They were going to try to send me home, Ryan.
But overall, your experience with this, I mean, so that you had this horrible experience and you survived it, what would you say was the biggest thing you learned from this? I mean, you're garnered from it. Because, I mean, there are other things that you've gone through. What makes that COVID experience and the heart attack significant compared to some of the other things you've experienced in your life?
I learned that I'm supposed to be here for whatever reason. That you know, life gives you obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
You can either be crushed by them or you can rise up and overcome them. And so one of the things in my past that you probably know is I was a very severe stutterer for many years. I stuttered so badly. Now you can't even shut me up. I talk constantly. But I stuttered from the time I was 6 or 7 through my 20s and beyond. Even after I was a doctor, I was still blocking on certain words. And I was given the grace to figure out that stuttering isn't real for me. There was nothing wrong with me. It's something I created. And I worked on it for years. And as you can see, I cured myself. And now as an avocation, I work with stutterers all over the world. And I teach them my technique of how not to stutter. And it's about controlling your mind and letting go of thoughts that are not valid for us.
Does it have anything to do with chakra, by the way? Does that any of the stuttering have anything to do with the chakras that we have, the spiritual portals? Does it do with some of the ailments?
It's very interesting that you asked that. I use the chakra work. I do guided meditations with stutterers that I work with to teach their body how to be calm, because stutterers live with anxiety. They don't know what it's like to feel calm and centered. And I retrain their cellular memory. Are you familiar with the concept of cellular memory? Because it's fascinating.
Is it the point where if like a kind of like a body memory? Body trauma.
It's similar to sense memory that actors use. What it simply means is that every single thing that's happened to you since you're born that you've experienced in your senses is still inside of you. So it's the reason you could hear a song you like and you'll remember the girl you liked in the third grade, or you smell a perfume and you're like, wow, my kindergarten teacher wore that perfume. There's no thought involved. It's like a sensory deja vu. It takes you back involuntarily. So all the traumatic events of your life are still stuck inside of you. Every time someone has hurt your feelings or broke a promise to you or hurt you in some way or broke up with you in a relationship, that's all still inside of you. And those things, I call them heart wounds. And that's what led to my first book on happiness, that healing your heart. If you don't mind, I'll show you.
Yeah, of course, healing your heart. But healing your heart by changing your mind. And it's got amazing picture with the dog.
Yeah, a spiritual and humorous approach to achieving happiness. You know how hard it is to get a dog to sit in lotus position? It's almost impossible.
Anybody can do it.
So it's got over 350 mostly 5-star reviews. But I call them heart wounds. And they affect your self-esteem and they affect your self-confidence. And they affect every decision that you make in your life. Because every time you're called upon to make a decision, you think about what to do. And if your thoughts are faulty, your decisions are not going to work out for you. So that's what I work on, releasing old thoughts that are not helpful to you. Thoughts that come from your subconscious mind that tell you that you'll never be successful, that you'll never amount to anything, that you can't achieve your goals. And it's all about fear. And fear is a bully.
Wow.
So
How do you get rid of that stuff? I mean, how do you, is there any way you, that you find that you can correct that? Because we've focused on the subconscious mind before, talking about how, you know, you go through and you route around and you kind of get rid of some of those beliefs. But if you have these negative experiences in cellular memory, how do you reprogram those? I mean, can you do anything to heal those memories and to
that's what I
help?
do. That's why I don't stutter. I heal those memories, and that's how I help other people. But
Well,
if
how can other people do it though for themselves?
I'll tell you, well, I don't know that I do it alone. I was very lucky that I was able to do it. It's a very gradual process because it's very difficult to examine your own thoughts. People tend to believe their thoughts. Right now, Ryan, you're holding thoughts. Some of them are working against you. And if I ask you what they are, you won't know because you're using them, because we tend to believe our thoughts. But you created every one of your thoughts. And your thoughts are not necessarily reality. They're not necessarily based on your experience. They're based on your interpretation of your experience, which is the reason why you could have two siblings that are completely different people. They grew up in the same household, but they're completely different people. And if you ask them about their childhood, you'd think they had different parents because their interpretation of their experience is completely different. It's like when people report a crime to the police. Three different people could have three different stories about what they saw and heard because we interpret information in a different way. So, very often people take information in and they put it through this filter in their head that's like a negative filter. There are some people that have a negative worldview. No matter what happens to them, they put a negative spin on it. In a simple way, if I like the way you look, if you're wearing a suit and I say, "Ryan, you look great, man. What a great suit." And instead of you just saying, "Thank you," you're like, "This old thing, I got it for $3 at a yard sale." You're denying the fact that somebody is complimenting you. You're deflecting it. There are a lot of people who can't accept a compliment. They're always putting themselves in a negative view. And the idea is, all you have to say is thanks. That's all. If people are complimenting you, they want to compliment you. Like, I think you look great. And I'm saying that to you right now. I know you for so many years. You always look good, but today you happen to look great.
Thank
And
you.
you're
You
welcome.
as well.
And thank you. And when people say those things, they don't just say them to be nice. They usually say them because they mean them. And it's important to be able to receive as well as to give. You know, in spiritual circles, there are two main things that are very important: gratitude and service. To be grateful for what you have and to do service for other people. So when you ask me that question, we're given obstacles. Everybody is given obstacles in their life. And you have a choice. You can either let them overcome you and be crumbled by them, or you can draw on some inner strength and overcome them. And by doing that, you become an inspiration to other people. And that's fascinating to me.
I'm really glad you brought that up. I was just listening to, I'm really into Stoicism and the book called The Trials of Seneca. And one of the videos I listened to last night was talking about kindness. And they're talking about, hey, look, it's good to be kind, it's good to be virtuous. But they said, don't set yourself on fire to keep someone else warm. So, from your perspective, how should one be in the world? Like, how much kindness should you show? What are some limitations? And is there a danger to being overly kind? Should you sometimes not be kind to people, especially if, you know, if they're assholes? Do you have
Absolutely.
to?
Yes. There's a balance, Ryan, and that's a, such an important question because I'm an empath and I've been an empath since I'm a child and I knew it. And it's very hard to lead your life when you're that sensitive. I'm affected by everything that's around me. And I've had to learn, and what I teach people when I speak, you know, I do a talk called Don't Believe Your Thoughts, but I talk a lot about sensitivity and kindness. Kindness is wonderful, but there are people who take advantage of you. They take kindness for weakness. And with me, that's a mistake because I've taught myself that you have to censor your life. You have to eliminate people who drain you. There are people who don't want to give back. Not even that they don't want to, they're not capable of doing it. And there's truly evil in the world. Evil definitely exists in the world. We see it every day. So you have to be very careful. I'm very careful who I share my energy with. When I do healing work, I only work on people that are very positive. I do a heart protection thing so I don't internalize negative energy. But sometimes you can't help it. So I'm very careful about who I help and to what degree. Because there was a time in my life, if I was with you and you were sad, I was sadder for you than you were. I overfelt my feelings. I was like an antenna for feelings.
Wow.
And I've had to learn that there are boundaries. What you said before, don't set yourself on fire to keep somebody warm. I thought of that just yesterday, but in comedic terms, that people often, to show protest, they set themselves on fire. What good does that do? Who's going to benefit from that? It's the most horrible death to set yourself on fire just to protest something. It would be a lot easier to just carry a sign.
I think, I think the person who did that, people, they got a lot of attention, and definitely got a lot of attention.
Get a lot of attention, but then everybody goes right back to their lives.
Yep, they go right back to the notification on their phone.
Right. It doesn't change anybody's life if you set yourself on fire. But there are people who do that. I just read a story. It happened just the other day. You know, it's like a hunger strike. That strikes me funny as well. You put somebody in jail, you want to punish them, and then they tell you they're not going to eat. Well, why would I care if I want to punish you in the first place? Why would I care if you're hungry? So there's a balance. Is the
you
point.
Know, you mentioned you're talking about sharing your energy with someone, and you perform comedy, and I wonder, like, so when you're out and you're doing comedy, you're in a whole room with full of people, and you're in front of a lot of strangers. Don't you feel an energy drain from that because you are casting your energy out, putting it out there, and getting it constantly reflected back on the reactions? So how do you cope with that? How are you able to cope with balancing and sharing your energy, even though if you're doing it in front of a group of strangers?
My energy is so strong, Ryan, that never happens to me. I never feel weak. I'll tell you an interesting story. I was doing a show one night, and a woman came in who was celebrating her 50th birthday, and she was so drunk, and she was yelling out during the MC's performance, yelling out all kind of just obnoxious stuff, ruining his entire performance. He introduces the first comic. She does the same thing, ruining his performance. They make the mistake of engaging with her to the point where they're yelling at each other, shut the F up. They're just yelling at each other, ruining the whole thing. The producer comes over to me. I'm supposed to go up next. He says to me, are you ready to handle that? I said, I don't allow that in my show. I don't allow that kind of behavior. And I don't know why you're allowing her to do that. Anyway, I go up on stage. The woman doesn't make a peep, not one sound, nothing, zero. The whole time I'm up there, nothing. And when I got off stage, people said to me, that was amazing. How did you do that? And I said, I think she felt the energy, that people are very sensitive to energy, whether they know it or not. And I think she felt me coming up, because I come up with a lot of energy and a lot of positive energy. And I think she felt like, don't do that to him, because he won't accept it. I don't deal with that. I would tell her to leave. I would say something, you know.
Like, well, then how could somebody do that? How could somebody replicate that in their own life and have it? Because I think it's really wonderful that you're able to do that.
I don't know. I didn't expect it to happen that way. I just came up, and I think it had to do with me stopping stuttering. It's given me a great confidence. Even if I'm nervous about other things, I don't show it. So people have said that to me, that they feel a sense of confidence from me. And I'm pretty sure that it had to do with me teaching myself to control my voice and not to stutter. Because stuttering is a terrible disability. It's very weakening. It's very draining. And you know what? I wanted to read this little thing that I carry with me every day. It's called About Fear. And it's a very powerful statement. Would you mind if I read this?
Of course, please.
It's so meaningful. I use it in all my work. And I think you'll get it. I think it'll be meaningful to you too. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. We ask ourselves, Who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that others won't feel insecure around you. We were born to manifest the glory within us. It's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. That's from a book by Marianne Williamson, her book called A Return to Love. And it's the most powerful statement that I've ever read. And you can see it's on a shredded piece of paper. I carry this in my pocket every day for years. I need to make a copy of it. But I use it in all my work because basically what it's saying is very often we play small. It doesn't serve anybody to play small. You're entitled to be successful. You're entitled to overcome any obstacles in your life. And when you do that, you're not bragging. You become an inspiration to other people. Because like what I tell them, if I stop stuttering, you could stop stuttering. If you do what I did, if you model yourself after someone who has what you want, you can accomplish the same thing that they accomplished. That's what that statement is about, that it's okay to be a superstar. Like, I'm bad at a lot of things. I'm not bragging when I say these things. I'm owning my strength. It's important to honor your strength, to be able to say what you're good at, as well as to say what you're not good at.
I mean, it could also be that we think about how most people are going through society right now, especially in between the schooling system. And I think people are taught or ingrained or indoctrinated to not be worthy, not be deserving, to feel that they should be subject and should be ruled over. I think it happens a lot in not only schooling, but for various religions, you're taught that you're not worthy. So when something like this happens, when they have an opportunity to say, oh, no, you can be great, on a subconscious level, it probably is a total contradiction of everything they've been ingrained when they're kids. I think that's, maybe that's probably one of the bigger challenges as to why people struggle. I can say that my upbringing, let's say religious education and schooling, a lot of things in there are disempowering. They do not favor critical thinking or favor the individual.
That's a great word, disempowering. Yeah, when you're taught that you're a sinner, you're born with sin, that makes people feel pretty bad. And, you know, religion can be wonderful for people, but it tends to divide us because it puts you in a category. What I like about spirituality is that it brings everybody together, because all it asks is that you believe in a force greater than yourself. And you could call it nature, the universe, God, whatever is comfortable for you, as long as you understand that you're not ruling your whole life, because when you think that you are, you tend to blame yourself when things don't go the way you'd like them to. You know, people are living in the past. They think, I should have done this. I could have said that when I had the opportunity. And they're beating themselves up. And then they're worrying about the future and they're losing the now. They're not present. Our reality, Ryan, right now is you and I are talking on this podcast. That's it. That's all that's going on in our lives. This morning is gone. I don't know what's going to happen later. This is all I have right now. This is very important to me that I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, kids are not being taught the right things in school. So in spirituality, you learn to be a worker among workers. There's a real balance because they tell you to try to detach from ego. Which is very interesting because in the entertainment business, it's all about ego. Jackie Mason once told me this fun story. He said, when you go in to buy a shirt, the guy just gives you the shirt. He doesn't give you the shirt and a picture of himself and say, this is who I am and this is what I do. But in the entertainment business, you're always telling people who you are and what you do. You know, for instance, I'll give you an example. In the last 10 years, I became a cover girl.
Yeah.
on the cover of Sutton Place magazine.
Yeah.
And they did a beautiful article. They have me holding a balloon because I always have balloons in my apartment.
You do. It's awesome.
Balloons and crayons and toys because I walk the walk. I don't just talk the talk.
Yeah.
I surround myself with things that make me happy. And I always say, my inner child is my best friend. And part of the article, they did pictures of me with all these comedians that,
Now,
Seinfeld,
Seinfeld, yeah.
Tiffany Haddish and Kevin Hart and D.L. Hughley and Nick Kroll and John Mulaney, Amy Poehler, Amy Schumer, even women not named Amy. They're all on my channel. And I can say that without feeling that I'm bragging, because then I can tell you on the other hand that my ADHD is so bad that I get so confused. I get lost so easily. I get nervous. I battle fear on a daily basis, but I don't let it stop me. I overcome it. That's why I wrote my second happiness book was called Fight the Fear, Overcoming Obstacles That Stand in Your Way. And that also became a bestseller in several categories, and my third book, I've always been fascinated by people who overcome obstacles. So 20 years ago, I started cutting out articles from newspapers and magazines about people who overcame tremendous difficulties. Stuttering is tiny compared to what these people overcame. I'll give you an example in a minute. So when I was recovering from COVID, I was in the house for months. I couldn't go out until I recovered, and I was literally afraid to leave the house. And I said, what can I do to turn a negative into a positive? And I went to that folder that I've been collecting for 20 years with all these stories. And I said, I'm going to write another book. And I called it Facing Adversity, Stories of Courage and Inspiration. That's this book. That's my
That is
third.
wonderful.
And it's stories of real life people who overcame tremendous things. Like this little 3-year-old boy, this story just, it's like impossible. It blows me away. A little 3-year-old boy playing hide and seek. He hides behind a tractor. The tractor is running. He puts his hands in it and it cuts off his hands. That's horrible enough. His father sees it happening. The father is a surgeon, but not that kind of surgeon. So he rushes his son to the hospital, and it's a holiday and there's no transplant surgeons around. So the father has no choice, but he assembles a team of people and he does the surgery himself. Never did surgery like that before. He reattaches his son's hands, puts them in casts. A few months later, they take off the casts. And the surgery worked. The hands are alive, but they're not functional. The grandfather is a martial artist, and he trains that little boy every day growing up to reuse his hands. And today, that little boy became a famous spinal surgeon. He runs the spinal surgery clinic at a hospital in Colorado. That can't even happen, man. That is the most.
Crazy. That is absolutely amazing that,
I mean, I've done surgery. I know what a steady hand you have to have. Here, his hands were reattached, and he becomes
Jeez.
a spinal surgeon, which is probably the most difficult kind of surgery. It's like brain surgery, And he runs the spinal clinic. So this book is a whole book of stories like that, of people who had to overcome unbelievable difficulties and went on to lead happy and meaningful lives.
That's wild. It's really wild. It's sad that things are they have to go through pain. And I want to share something with their audience because they may not know about this, but we go way back. I think I met you back in 2002, early 2002 or 2003, in New York comedy. And I'd say, Jeffrey, it was awesome meeting you, but those were the worst years of my life. I remember going up doing comedy. It was just I was always depressed and sad going up on stage. The comedy was one of the only things that was a moment of joy. I love doing that. And then I met you, and you were very different. I just there was something about you, and I couldn't believe that someone like you was in that world, because a lot of people in that world, there's a lot of sadness and there's just a lot of craziness in that world. And you were completely different. So I was just curious as to, of all the worlds that you're gonna experience, enjoy, why stand up comedy? I mean, I know it's funny. I love comedians are really funny. I think they're real, and the is nothing like it. But of all the places that you were gonna make your become well known, why would you choose that world?
That's such a great question. I don't really have a choice. When I was 12 years old, Ryan, and it's very strange for me to even realize this. When I was 12 years old, I chose what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be a doctor, but I knew I was too sensitive to handle life and death situations. And I was wearing braces at the time. So I said, you know what? I'll be a dentist and I'll make people look beautiful. I'll give them a beautiful smile. And I was already writing comedy. So my whole life was that split. And I remember laying in bed as a kid thinking, well, I want to be a dentist, but I want to be in comedy. Whoever heard of doing both? Nobody ever did that, you know? And most kids, when they're 12, they can't decide what they want to do. They want to be a fireman, a policeman, something exciting. I wanted to be a dentist then, and I was already writing comedy. So my whole life was kind of laid out for me that way, and I never changed my mind. I could never figure out which one I liked best, and I wound up doing both, which is a very difficult thing to do, to lead both. When you said, it's always interesting for me to hear when people met me and what they thought, because I've
You
learned about
stood out. You
myself.
were different. You were different. I always say it was kind of strange. Like you just had this really interesting presence, and I felt like, it's like you were in the wrong. Like, why is this guy here? Why is this guy doing it? And I clicked with you immediately. It was
Immediately.
just
Yeah,
strange. As soon as I met you, I clicked with you right away. I was like, this guy, he's cool.
but you know what? Kindred spirits attract. And maybe we knew each other in a previous life, but it always felt comfortable knowing you with all the iterations, you know, with your publicity work. And then you were involved with that other festival. I don't remember the
The
name.
New York Underground Comedy Festival.
Yeah, Underground
Yeah,
Comedy Festival.
that was
Yes.
fun. That
And
was a
then
blast.
so many years you did the funniest reporter shows. And I was always part of that, you know, and we always stayed in touch. But you changed your life dramatically from those days. You know, you went on to be married and have a beautiful child, and you know, you had the sense to leave New York and still carry on your business from where you are, which is amazing. And you grew this into such an amazing business, you know, representing so many lawyers. And then you do this podcast that's on for 10 years. You know how rare that is? So few people, they start a podcast and it's off in a year. And you get such interesting speakers.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to have you on. You're the first person, and it's just an insatiable curiosity. I think there's so many places to go, and I know Jeffrey. I feel like there's. I don't want to say, I don't speak negatively about it, any shows, but I'm just going to say that sometimes there's a this kind of like, I don't know, people are really into this new age stuff, and it's all about new age. I'm like, I'm all about finding the truth way beyond that. Just pure truth, plain and simple.
Yeah, I
Pure.
look confused. First of all, everybody's so stressed out after the last
Yeah.
3 years. There's a lot of misinformation going around. There's a lot of confusion. I think people are very depressed in general. I love the comedy world because there's always something funny to think about. I have this need to make people laugh. I often question it. I don't know what that is. It's the hardest thing in the world to do, to get up on a stage and try to convince strangers, total strangers, that what you think is funny is actually funny. It's a very, very hard thing to do. But somehow I managed to combine all those careers. So when I speak, when I do a lecture, I bring in humor. Because when you're just speaking, if you're just dry, it's boring to people. They tune out. People respond better to humor. People love to laugh. And in our times, they really need to laugh.
Yeah, it's weird. I remember years ago, I feel like you could laugh at a lot more things, and part of this intolerance, like you can't make jokes about stuff. I think you should laugh about everything. I love dark humor particularly, but
Oh,
where
wow.
do you see things going?
I was
That's
talking
what.
about that just yesterday. A lot of comedy has become very mean-spirited with roast battles and stuff. There was a time, you know, I was the main writer for the Friars Roast for 12 years, and I would go up to the celebrity that was being roasted, and I said, "Is there anything in your personal life that you don't want to be made fun of? Because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings with jokes." I would always ask, and some people would say, well, don't talk about this or whatever. Some of them would say, no holds barred, it's fine, I'm good. And but I would always ask, these days in roast battles, they purposely try to hurt people's feelings. If someone in the family has cancer, they joke about that. If someone's relative passed away, they joke about that. To me, you know, a lot of comics like to say, well, there should be no boundaries in comedy. I don't believe that. I think there's certain things that you don't talk about. And a lot of comedy is very ugly. When I'm at a show, if I have a date with me, I don't want to hear ugly stuff. You know, a lot of people, they'll laugh politely, which encourages the comedians or the so-called comedians to work on a very low level of humor. That you're supposed to grow out of that when you're 12 years old. You know, sorry about that. I'm hoping that the phone will stop in a minute. It stops after one more ring, and I'm sure you can cut that out when you edit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You do that. And
it's going to ring one more time, and then it's going to stop. So funny that he's calling now. But so I was talking about this yesterday, about cancel culture and comedy. If you're a smart person, use your intuition. You can tell who's coming from a place of love or a place of hate. You know, I use Russell Peters as an example all the time. He's an Indian comedian with no accent. He fills Madison Square Garden, 20,000 people. He imitates every accent. He has a multicultural audience. Everybody's laughing at themselves and with each other. And that's how the world's supposed to be. I look at comedy as a healing force, you know?
Well, I'm going to ask you two things about that. I was really into this thing they had on Reddit where you go to roast me, you put a picture of yourself on there, people make fun of you. I was really into it. I thought it was fun. But then I started reading this quote by Bruce Lee. It said, don't ever make fun of yourself. It's kind of like, you know, you don't want to demean yourself in some ways. And I was like, maybe that makes a little sense. But from an energetic perspective, this is a two-part question. One, is roasting yourself or allowing yourself to be made fun of, is that something that has a positive or negative spiritual frequency? And also, in your perspective of all the comedians that you've seen over the years, maybe three, maybe I'd like to say three for today, what three comedians have the highest vibration that you can feel?
Look, that's a very interesting, you have great questions today.
Thank you.
The first part of your question was, I do a lot of self-deprecating material. If anybody said about me what I say about myself on stage, I wouldn't like it. I would tell them, what right do you have to say that? But if I say it about myself, then that's fine, because it makes the audience comfortable. It's like, it's hard for beautiful girls to do comedy or very handsome guys, because people don't like to laugh at certain people. For many years, women had to downplay their looks in comedy. You know, Phyllis Diller and Lucille Ball, they were very attractive women, but they had to downplay it because people didn't like to laugh at women. It was a thing that women were respected and you wouldn't laugh at them and you wouldn't expect them to be telling jokes. These days, it's a lot easier. There's a lot of beautiful girls who are performing. A lot of them are using their beauty to get on stage, you know, where they're not really funny. They're just nice to look at. But again, a lot of comics do self-deprecating humor because it makes you part of the audience. The audience feels comfortable because every single person in the world has something about themselves that they would change if they could. But most of the things we can't change, you have to live with it. That's about acceptance. So again, it's okay if you say it about yourself, but I wouldn't want people to roast me. I wouldn't make myself the brunt of the joke. I don't like that. I don't accept it. If people say something, I tell them, I don't think that's funny. Because they always use the same, and it's funny, I was just talking about this again yesterday, that if somebody makes a joke at your expense and you call them on it, invariably they're going to say, don't be so sensitive, I was just joking. And I say, well, I have a good sense of humor because I'm in the comedy world. What was the joke? I didn't get it. What was funny about that, you know? And they never have a good answer because it was mean-spirited. They're just trying to make themselves better by making fun of you. There was a second part to your question about who works on a high vibration.
Yeah, so three comedians that are...
I don't know on a high vibration. I respect a few guys who I was just with, Mark Norman, Andrew Schultz, and Chris DiStefano. Three young guys who talk about controversial topics, but they're such good writers that they talk about both sides of it that no one could get offended. I was just with Mark Norman. He sold out the Beacon Theater. And Chris DiStefano, I was with him. He sold out Radio City. And the next night, sold out the theater at Madison Square Garden. I don't think anybody's done that. And this Sunday, I'll be with him at the Tarrytown Music Hall. He sold that out too. They're very clever writers, and they can talk about subjects where other people might get canceled, but they talk about them in such a way that you have to laugh. They're just very smart. They're very clever writers. So I really respect those three guys. And it's not about necessarily a higher vibration, because it's not like Deepak Chopra is doing comedy.
Yeah.
But it's like, but I respect what they do because they're clever.
I love Bill Burr. I've watched him for 20 years. I remember when, I mean, when I was first starting out there, he was at some of the clubs. It was amazing. And I never thought he was going to get, I mean, it was just wonderful to see how big he got. But he really tackles some controversial subjects,
I should have
but he
mentioned,
makes people laugh.
yeah, I bet, but he's in the next generation up. I should have mentioned him too. He's another one. He's fantastic that way. And I'll be seeing him next month. You know, he's producing the annual Patrice O'Neill benefit on March 26th at the City Center in New York. So I was Patrice's co-host on the Black Phillip show. I was the only white guy on the show. And I was the opening act for the Martin Luther King Comedy Festival in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
Oh.
The only white comic on the show. And that's great because, as I said, I look at comedy as a healing force that brings everyone together. So I get asked to do stuff like that. And it's really cool. But Bill Burr definitely belongs in that category.
He's pretty amazing. And the final question I have is there any particular thought or action that people could do on a regular basis that will kind of help them grow their spirit or keep them more at ease or more at peace?
Yeah, well, you know what? Unless you're part of a group, I guess you can read about spirituality. You go to a spiritual bookstore and buy some books. Knowledge is power. You know, like if you're not part of a spiritual group already, maybe you could go out and drink and do drugs, or you can join a 12-step program because they're very spiritual. I do a lot of work with people from 12-step programs, and they're very spiritual. And it teaches you how to think. It puts you in a good place so that even when it feels like things are not going right in your life, you know how to process it. That's very important. Nobody's going to have a life where every day is happy and comfortable. You know, when you walk into my apartment, you would think that a child lived there because it's filled with balloons
It
and
is the awesomest apartment.
What you asked me something that made me think of that. Yeah, I have put toys around. My belief, what I tell people, and this could be helpful to your listeners, I teach people to create their own happiness center. And what that means is when you leave the house, you have no control over what the universe has in store for you. You have no idea whether you go left or right, your whole life is going to be different. If you go one way, you could win the lottery. If you go the other way, you could trip and fall. Who knows, you know? But you can't overthink it. Whichever way you go is the way you're supposed to go, which is another spiritual principle that you're being guided in some way. And so these things are very important. So when I teach people to create a happiness center, I teach them to surround themselves with things that make them happy wherever they look. Wherever you look in your house, you should see colors that make you happy, pictures of the people that you love, not bills and not tax returns and not things that make you sad or stressful. You should be surrounded by things that make you happy. I keep this little gong on my desk like this.
To
And when I do guided meditations, it's a little sound bowl. And I keep this here and I meditate to that, you know. There are ways to try to stay sane in this crazy world, but you have to do something for yourself. Nobody's going to come and do it for you. So, like I say, my house looks like a children's thing. In the article they wrote about me, the opening line is, "My inner child is my best friend." I stay very connected to my inner child. Very, very important to do. It may sound silly to some
I don't
people,
think so at all. I
but
don't think so at all.
if you remember when you were a little boy and your friends came to call for you and say, "Hey, can Ryan come out to play?" And
The
that's so
best.
exciting. You feel all excited. That's not supposed to stop just because you grow up and you do serious things. You're supposed to still play in your life. do serious things and still play and have fun and stay connected to that inner child. And that's what helped. I really believe that it helps to keep you young and it helps to keep you healthy.
Mr. Jeffrey Gurian, thank you so much for being with us today on our 10-year anniversary show. And there's without question, if you listen to this today, you know why Jeffrey was our first guest. The ideal Outer Limits have been a truth guest, a person who is not from this world, clearly from a different galaxy. So thanks for hanging out on Earth, especially during these crazy periods of time. Jeffrey, I love you so much, and it's such an honor to have your presence in my life, in my family's life. And I wish you nothing but peace, love, and happiness in all your journeys. You are a bright guiding light in this world for so many. Oh, you can learn more about Jeffrey by going to the website at jeffreygurian.com.
Ryan, you're a kindred spirit, and it's my honor to be on with you. That's why we connected so many years ago. You're a kindred spirit, and you're an amazing human being. And I'm honored to have you as a friend. So thank you for having me on. 10 years. Next, here's to the next 10 years.
Next 10 years.
I'll be on for the 20th anniversary.
I would love to have it. Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our unbelievable guest, and special thanks, as always, to our virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Constance Dallas, and our associate producer, Jenny Lamisa. To learn more about the Out of Limits of Inner Truth, please go to our website at outoflimitsradio.com. And till the next time we meet, my friends, I wish upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beer. Take good care, and thank you so much for listening.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.